And on today's Windy City Queercast, it's all about queers and theater. That's right. Coleman Domingo is my co-host live from the Big Apple. He's on his way to an audition. So you're going to hear what that's kind of like for an actor preparing for an audition. But we also have Bonnie Metzger. She's the new artistic director of About Face Theater, the nation's largest GLBT theater company that's right here in Chicago. So if you come to visit, you want to check out what's going on at About Face Theater. And Coleman is in a centerfold. That's right. What magazine? You'll find out. How naked? Pretty naked.
Windy City Queercast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We're talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Coleman Domingo.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queercast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming.
American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Listening to the Windy City Queercast show number 237. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Coleman Domingo, taking a bite out of the Big Apple.
Ha! Yes, you are, baby. I love this. You said you're multitasking. We're recording while you iron pants.
I'm ironing pants and about to go because I have to do an audition today for an officer, Officer Chesboro.
I hope you get it. That sounds hot.
Officer Chesboro sound hot?
It sounds like very full Monty.
Yes.
I think you have to take down your pants.
Well, I just might. Hey, you know, anything to get the job.
Anything to get the job. Have you ever had anybody try to get you to have sex with them when you go on an audition?
No, and that really upsets me because I think, you know, because I would like to have sex with someone to get a job, but they never ask.
Oh, you're hilarious. I love it. Hey, speaking of which, you know, there is this this new film coming out based on the life of Harvey Milk. And, you know, it's putting in all these male Hollywood actors now are playing gay. It's so funny after Brokeback. Remember back in the days with Philadelphia where we all should have given them like a purple heart for playing gay. Like
exactly.
Or Denzel should have gotten one just for being in a gay film. I mean, exactly. He didn't even have to play
gay. Yeah.
Yeah. Guilt by association or something.
Well, you know, everyone, you know, they always say people will get an Oscar or something if they play like mentally ill or gay, you know?
Yeah. Or ugly.
Or go ugly, like Charlize Theron or something, you know?
And Nicole Kidman with her nose, you know?
Like, why don't they just hire some ugly person to actually do it?
I don't know. That's what stretch is that? What kind of fun is that? I think we like to see people be demoralized is actually what I think. I think they like people to seem crazy or ugly or gay, which they think is a bad thing.
Exactly.
But this actually should be a really interesting film. It's going to be called Milk, and it is based on the life of Harvey Milk, and in our news story this week, we have a Harvey Milk comes up in our news this week, in our show today. But what is really interesting is that James Franco, who I think is a total little hottie.
Yeah.
He is, you know, he's had this movie, this stoner movie this summer, Pineapple Express. And now he is playing the longtime boyfriend, Scott Smith, of Harvey Milk. In this new film, and Sean Penn is playing Harvey Milk, which means it's going to be, he'll be fully immersed in it, you know, whatever the film is like. But I love this story that I read. There is a kissing scene between the two of them. And the director of the film was inspired by this artist who filmed two strangers kissing for 12 hours.
Wow.
And so their kiss didn't last that long, but I guess it's a very long kiss.
Fabulous.
And they talk about it. And it's very funny because James Franco said, you know, it's quite interesting because it lasts a really long time and there's so many people watching you. And at the same time, everybody's wearing these fake mustaches because it takes place in the 1970s.
Yeah.
So he was just talking about how foreign an experience it is, really has nothing to do with it being a guy, but that there's a mustache and he's got a mustache and there's all these people watching and it's a really long kind of slow kiss.
Wow.
Which is quite funny, I think.
That is pretty funny.
I can't wait to see it. It's coming out in December. It's kind of the big new The Hours or Dreamgirls or...
I think it's going to be pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm super excited about it.
Me too. I really am too. It's about time somebody's done a film about him.
It's true. And it's also about time that we had a transgender person on America's Next Top Model, because most of the trans people I know are the most beautiful people
on the
planet. And her name is Isis, like almighty Isis.
You're kidding me. That's fabulous.
I love it.
Probably now, is she black or white or Asian or what? What's
to
do?
I don't know. I haven't seen her yet, but I think it's fantastic. She's from Maryland.
Raul says she's biracial. Yeah.
There you go. So she's going to be beautiful. She's going to be biracial and, you know, having lived in both genders. How amazing is that?
Fantastic. I'm all for it.
The American melting pot right there.
Mm-hmm.
So wow. I want you to tell me, because you are going to be on the glossy pages of Out Magazine. What's it for and how did it come about?
Oh, it just came out and it's the September issue of Out Magazine and it's called Broadway Boys. And they're highlighting on four Broadway actors and they chose me, which is wonderful. And I have this cool, like, spread. I have like three photos, me wearing like some Yoji Yamamoto and some Matsumo and some other stuff, some other fancy
design. God bless.
Some other fancy design, but I was thinking some of the designers that I can't pronounce, but it looks pretty fabulous and it's very alive and it's cool. Yeah.
Who is the company you're keeping?
I'm keeping company with this guy, Jeff Bowen from Title of Show, and a couple other guys. I forget their names, but they're really cool. And one guy from, who was in like Boy from Oz, and another guy from Chorus Line.
Are you scantily clad in any of these?
You know, I am. I'm topless. I'm showing my bodacious tatas in at least two of the shots.
And are you having bedroom eyes leaning against a door frame or something? I always think that's Out Magazine-y.
Yeah, I'm actually like jumping up. They wanted me to be more character-y, so I was jumping up. Like I'm wearing this Yoji Yamamoto jacket. With a train, it seems like it's like a 20-foot train, and I'm actually tossing it up in the air and jumping up, and then I'm wearing some fabulous kind of silver jacket, and then I'm also wearing like some white kind of cropped pants with no shirt on.
It's delicious. That's your Fire Island look, black cocoa skin and
casual dinner look, exactly.
Casual dinner look
at the captain's table,
exactly. Little cocoa butter on your cocoa butter skin and
yes,
mm.
get it.
Mm. I'm even having an ungay thought. That's weird.
Amy Matheny, I believe I'm beginning to turn you on.
You know I like the black men. Black men.
I like the black men. I like the black men.
I like me some Taye Diggs. I'd change for him in a red hot minute. Idina Menzel, she'd be thrown to the floor and the curb.
Oh yeah.
He's a beautiful man.
Oh, Lord.
Beautiful butt and a bald head and lots of round cube-like things to hold on to.
You're about to make me go into the bathroom and touch myself a little bit. Come on now. Come on. I'm supposed to be going to an audition, Amy.
I know. I'm trying to do the work of the Lord.
I'm trying to do the God's work today,
that's
Amy.
Right. You got to tape that penis down to play an officer. You got to have it all in line.
Devil, get back.
Have it all in line. Oh, well, on today's Queercast, we have a whole show with the new artistic director of About Face Theater. About Face Theater, I'm actually a company member there. So this is a bit subjective, but what isn't on the Queercast? I kind of get to decide what I want to talk about. And there's so much enthusiasm right now around this woman, Bonnie Metzger, who comes to About Face Theater, Chicago's award-winning GLBT theater company, with also an award-winning GLBT youth theater. It's the largest gay theater company in the United States. And Bonnie Metzger comes to us from Brown University, having worked alongside Paula Vogel, amazing lesbian playwright, and also comes to us after having been one of the founding members of Joe's Pub, and in New York City at the Public, and also a very long career that started as a young little lesbo in the theater world, sitting alongside and helping Hal Prince produce many, many, many productions. So wow, the career is illustrious, and she now has a wife and a baby. She's just been to Africa and now is sitting down in Chicago for a number of years. I think she hopes to call this home for many, many, many years to come. And she's going to talk to me about just the theater scene. Is there a queer aesthetic anymore? How has it been being a woman and a lesbian in the realm of the theater world, from New York to Chicago to Denver to the university level? And so I'm extremely excited. We're going to break and do some news and tell you what's going on in the theater scene. And we will be back with Bonnie Metzger.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. After a background check, a training course, and a 5-day waiting period.
It only shoots T-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, marksman of the mezzanine, because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. Openly gay millionaire Jared Polis is one step closer to becoming the third openly gay member of Congress. Polis, who is running in Colorado's 2nd Congressional District, recently defeated Joan Fitzgerald in the Colorado Democratic primary. He faces Republican challenger Scott Sterin in November. So far, Polis's sexuality has created very little controversy.
Two University of Nebraska wrestlers were dropped from their team after nude pictures of them appeared on a gay porn website. The athletes were let go only 3 days after a blog featured nude pictures of them on fratmentv.com. The team's coach, Mark Manning, said that the athletes caused the school's athletic department embarrassment, and their behavior did not reflect the school's standard of excellence.
Boy, I got to get on this internet.
Mm-hmm.
A 29-year-old Jamaican lesbian has been granted asylum by an immigration judge. The judge ruled that the woman's sexual orientation could lead to violence if she is deported to her home country, Jamaica, where homosexuality is considered a crime.
Two civil rights heroes may be honored by federal and state holidays. Cesar Chavez was a Mexican-American labor leader who supported GLBT issues. There is an effort to honor Chavez with a federal holiday. Harvey Milk became the first openly gay elected official of a large city. He was assassinated in 78, along with San Francisco Mayor George Moscone. A California legislator introduced a measure to create a state holiday to honor Milk.
A Wisconsin organization, the Cream City Foundation, is plastering photographs of real local gay families on over 30 billboards and bus shelters across the southeastern part of Wisconsin to help raise understanding and awareness. The Gay Neighbor Billboard media campaign aims to drive people to the website gayneighbor.org to answer questions about lesbian and gay families and to challenge stereotypes.
Actress Anne Hathaway jumped on the bandwagon about who she would go gay for. Hathaway, who recently split from her Italian businessman boyfriend, said, "If I was going to go gay for another actress, it would have to be Cate Blanchett. We could talk about theater, and she has played a guy really well, so if I got bored, that'd be nice."
We still don't know who shot JR, but rumor has it that the cast of Dallas are throwing a giant reunion party. The crew plans to head south to Texas's South Fork Ranch to celebrate the film's 30th anniversary in style. Patrick Duffy, Linda Gray, and others have confirmed the reunion. Dallas ran from 1978 to 1991 and was one of the most successful dramas on television.
Katy Perry's chart-topping streak has come to an end. Rihanna's single Disturbia knocked Perry's smash summer hit I Kissed a Girl out of the number one spot, where it has dominated the past 7 weeks. Perry became the first female artist to hold the number one spot for that long. Well, if you talk about kissing girls, everybody likes that.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr. with another Night at the Movies Minute. 2 years after her stunning performance in Volver, Penelope Cruz is back with two movies, the romance drama Elegy and Vicky Cristina Barcelona, a relationship comedy that finds Woody Allen back on firm footing. Cruz shows remarkable range and fearlessness in both performances, no surprise to her longtime advocates. Elegy, based on the Philip Roth novel, tracks the course of a May-December romance. David, played by Ben Kingsley, is a respected college professor, author, and self-acknowledged sybarite who falls in love at a late age with Cruz as Consuela, a student 30 years his junior. At first, he simply wants to seduce her, like all the others, but then, incomprehensibly, the hunter gets captured by the game, and David becomes convinced that the age difference between him and Consuela will sooner or later become a problem. In spite of himself, he steers the love affair into rocky shoals. This is awfully familiar stuff. It's easy to imagine this being enacted by a gay troll in A Young Trick, for example. So you either go with the scenario, including the moth in the last quarter, all the way or not at all. What helps the film stand out is the exceedingly polite, less than melodramatic approach of director Isabelle Cogette. The initial seduction is scored to Eric Satie, for example. And the emotional complex leading performances of Kingsley and Cruz help, as do the nice supporting ones for Patricia Clarkson, Dennis Hopper, and Deborah Harry in a nice cameo. Romance junkies of every stripe are sure to get their fix with Elegy, while Penelope Cruz fanatics might just have to race home and take a cold shower. She's got the best breasts I've ever seen. This is from a gay man. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
Jersey Boys, Chicago's smash hit, has put a whole new block of tickets on sale now and into the new year. So book your seats today, either for yourself or as a great holiday gift, because there's no better way to say 'tis the season than with the seasons.
Oh, what a night.
Jersey Boys, now on sale through January 11th. Visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of August 18th, 2008, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Powerful movement, mesmerizing imagery, and naked people on scaffolding doing Shakespeare. Don't miss Unsex Me Here, a stripped-down one-hour production of Macbeth, featuring performers as living canvases, costumed in projected textures and unique lighting, and even audience participation. Fridays and Saturdays at 11 o'clock at National Pastime Theater, 4139 North Broadway. Tickets are only $15. Visit thelivingcanvas.com.
Don't miss the world premiere of Love in the Middle Ages at Village Players in Oak Park, a new musical comedy about baby boomers jumping back into the dating scene. Fun for couples or a big group. August 21st to September 21st. Call 866-764-1010 or go to villageplayers.org for tickets.
Don't miss an evening of classic Lily Tomlin, one night only, Saturday, November 1st at 8 o'clock at the Rosemont Theater. Get your tickets now for Lily Tomlin and use the special WCT code to receive $10 off per ticket for any ticket level. The discount offer is only good through August 31st. Don't miss Lily's only Chicagoland appearance. Visit www.ticketmaster.com and enter the WCT code.
For more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi, I'm Amy Ray, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on a tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world, and a bold world for me.
So, folks, the About Face Theater is the nation's largest GLBT theater, and it has a new leader at the helm. Bonnie Metzger has come to Chicago and to About Face in her inaugural season. What are we going to see, and how is she going to make her mark on queer theater, not only in Chicago, but also in the nation? Hey, Bonnie, how are you?
Good. Yeah. Thanks for coming to hang out with me, Amy.
I love it. We're hanging out at the Starbucks in Uptown.
I'm somewhat embarrassed to say that's true.
Yeah.
Not to be in Uptown. Uptown is very cool. Yeah. Way into Uptown. You know, the thing about Chicago is that it's just like a really big Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It's just like neighborhoods and everybody has great apartments.
Yeah.
And it's sort of this beautiful, harmonious, or not so harmonious looking place. And Uptown is sort of like, it feels like, you know, like that, like that it's shifting and, you know, on the one corner you have people with really, really fancy strollers, and on the next corner you have like cops totally arresting, you know, racial profiling people. It's like
America.
It's like America.
Yeah. It's like the melting pot of America. So you mentioned Brooklyn. Is where do you come to us from to Chicago? I mean, by route of where?
Well, you know, I think like most gay and lesbian people of my age, I grew up somewhere.
25.
25. I grew up somewhere. Out there,
yeah.
in a suburb that doesn't really need to be named because it's like so many other places. And then I went to New York, and I was in New York for over 15 years. So really, I think of Brooklyn as my home in a lot of ways. But then I was at the Public Theater for a really long time with George C. Wolfe, and that was an amazing formative experience for me.
But at a
certain point, I felt like, you know what, there's got to be another way to make art than just this one model, that, you know, this one New York-based sort of model. And I went out and I through this 365 project I did with Susan Morey Parks, as well as this association with this incredible theater, Curious, in Denver, I started to see, how an artist can live in a smaller art community or in a different art community. And I got really interested in the questions around that, around new models for producing theater and for kind of engaging with community.
Let's talk about the 365 plays and 365 days, which is what you're talking about. And because no matter where you're listening to this podcast, a theater near you may have done one of Susan Morey Parks' plays. And what was the impetus for this project, and how did you get involved with it?
You know, Susan Morey and I have been, we went to New York at the same age right after college. And we were in a workshop of playwrights organized by Mack Wellman in Brooklyn.
Oh, wow.
And so I've known her since I was 21 years old, just coming to New York. And I have our collaboration, you know, I took over a theater in Brooklyn called Baca Downtown in my early 20s, where she was first produced. So I was her earliest producer. I went to the Public Theater just as George Wolfe became interested in her work. I produced her work there. We worked together there. and we've become really close friends. She had written this after she got the Pulitzer Prize. She started doing this daily practice of writing a short play every day. And she did it mostly because she moved to LA. She started doing screenplay work. She was getting kind of far away from her theater work. And she wanted to reconnect with it. And I was producing Fucking A in New York at the time. And that's why I most knew about it. As she was writing it, she would tell me, you know,
you're
producing
Fucking A?
Do you know Fucking A?
I don't know Fucking A.
Oh, Susan Laurie Parks has this great, incredible piece about kind of a woman who, she's a mother, and she gives illegal abortions in a place where abortions are not legal. And so she does this service. It's this opera. It's this incredible piece.
It's an opera?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. And we were doing it at the Public Theater. It was actually my last show at the Public Theater in 2003. And this was when Susan Laurie were writing these short little plays. And a couple years later, she was visiting me in Colorado when I had left the Public and I was free and I was writing. And I just asked her what happened to all those little tiny plays, those 365 plays. And she's like, you know, I didn't really know what to do with them. I just put them in a drawer. And I was like, oh, my God, let's do them. That would be so cool. What do we want to do with them? And so we just started dreaming about having lots of little plays and how we might be able to include as many artists as possible in the producing of them, because it's such a vast project anyway. And so we just hatched this idea. And then by talking to people we knew in different communities all over the country, every time we had a conversation in a different place, they added good ideas. And so it just, you know, the organization of it happened actually by having a lot of conversations with a lot of people. So it ended up in many, that we had these 16 networks of 52 theaters. And here in Chicago, there was an entire Chicago network of 52 theaters. And they basically, it worked like a relay race.
Yeah.
And, you know, one theater company would do 7 short plays, and then the next week they would pass the baton to the next theater company. And that was happening, you know, every week in 16 different places. And that was really amazing, just to see how alive and well theater was all over the country, you know, in really surprising places as well, in places like Chicago that you think of as like a really vibrant theater community.
Yeah.
So it was very re-energizing for me and made me feel
imagine.
Like,
and connecting you on such a national level with work and artists and theaters. So why then, do you want to sit in the shade?
No, I don't care.
Are you good?
Yeah.
So why then About Face Theater? What was the spark and the risk to throw your name in the hat and come and try to be a part of this family here?
Well, you know, I think of myself as a political person. I'm really interested in political issues. And when I was at the Public Theater at the end was when we were deciding to go to war. 2002, 2003, and there was a very active anti-war movement in the theater in New York called Thaw. And they needed a place to meet, they needed a place to have events, and I advocated for them with my friend Bill Bragan, who was running Joe's Pub at the time. We went to the senior leadership of the Public Theater and wanted to provide them a place to have meetings. And they said no, because not-for-profits are supposed to be, you know, in the way that not-for-profits really, you know, it's created in relation to for-profit structures, as and you know, the government has put these restrictions supposedly on what we're able to do in terms of advocacy. And that was a very disheartening moment for me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Especially because Joe Papp was this, you know, known commie and, you know, was very political.
Right.
And, you know, it showed over the period of 30 years what's happened to the not-for-profit. It's become very mindful of
the corporate sector and
wanting to reach disparate constituencies that don't agree and, you know, and trying to be down the middle of the road. And so the fact that, you know, so I wasn't looking to run a theater company. I was really thinking I needed to work outside the system to make change. But when this company, when I got contacted about this particular company, because advocacy is at the heart of what About Face is doing, by really getting inside of issues around the LGBTQ community, that really appealed to me, because it wasn't just about making theater. I love making theater, but it's also about these larger issues that are incredibly important today. It's about a youth program, you know, and these queer kids are just unbelievably inspiring, yeah. You know? And so the moment that you come in contact with them, mm-hmm. it's a really changeable yeah. experience. And so, you know, once I really got inside of what about Face Theater is really doing,
yeah.
I was seduced by it, and I thought, okay, well, I guess I should go to Chicago and be involved in this work that's really important.
So let's talk about this, because I just interviewed Tina Landau a few weeks ago, and you know, Tina and I've known each other for a long time and haven't been in touch in a while, but you know, I told her, I said, I almost want to talk to you more about being a woman in theater and being a lesbian in theater, because I've never heard you have an opportunity to talk about that very much, which I think was really refreshing. And one of the things that she said to me was, because I was talking to her about being, you know, a woman in theater, and she said, you know, it's, especially in New York, there's this gay male mafia, and it doesn't matter that I'm gay, it's the fact that I'm not male. And yet they like me, you know, and so I play well with others, so to speak. But I do think it's an interesting road when you have both of those dynamics going on. And obviously this will be different because you're running a queer company, so one would probably expect that you would be queer. But how has that impacted your aesthetic and being a woman, being a lesbian, and how has that been challenging for you through the course of your career in trying to make art?
I love the fact that you ask really simple, easy questions. I really appreciate that.
My podcast listeners are deep people.
Deep.
They know the deep answers. We'll ask your shoe size, your favorite color later.
I had the great, great fortune of working with Harold Prince when I was very, very young. And I think of that as really my apprenticeship in the theater. And the thing that...
Can I ask what it was on?
I came to work for him, actually, on a little-known project he did with the Irish Rep Company in New York called Grandchild of Kings, where he had himself adapted the autobiography of Sean O'Casey.
Oh, wow.
And we did it site-specifically, and, of course, Eugene Lee was designing in this, at that point, a brand-new theater at Theater for the New City in New York, which was a downtown theater. The theater I had run, Baca Downtown, had just closed, and I had... gone, you know, I'd flung myself out of New York and I was licking my wound somewhere, and I had known Hal Prince because I'm very good friends with his daughter Daisy, and so here Hal was about to embark for the first time in a downtown venue, which to him was like really going to the, you know, the, I don't know, you know, Termekistan or something,
yeah.
And so he called me and he asked me if I would like to come and help him in some way on this project, and we both didn't really know what that meant, and that turned into a 4-year association with him.
Wow.
Where what he would do is he would just, you know, we'd be sitting there and he'd be like, I'm gonna do this show called Kiss of the Spider Woman, I'm gonna develop it in Canada, do you want to come to Canada? I was like, well, let me look, you know, I'll look in my book, you know, oh, okay, I'll go to Canada, and that sort of thing. So then I went to London with him. I eventually, you know, this was the pre-production period for Showboat. It was when he was associated with Garth Drabinsky, which was mm-hmm. live entertainment up in
sure. Canada.
In Canada. But mostly it really, you know, Hal Prince was a protege of George Abbott. And George Abbott being one of the great producers of the first half of the 20th century. And he, in his office, had, you know, Betty Comden and Adolph Green. He had Jerry Robbins. He had, you know, Stephen Sondheim, Harold Prince. And, you know, I would sit at these tables with Hal Prince and I would hear these stories about what it was like. And, you know, and it really made me, put me in touch with being show people. You know, that I am just the yeah. next generation of show people.
Yeah, you're with the heavies and the show people.
Yeah, but also, you know, it's just like, it used to be like you know, James O'Neill did Count of Monte Cristo for 40 years
yeah.
or whatever, the same show, and you went from town to town and... You know, I feel really connected with that tradition, with what it is really to make theater for people and how that's changed. And so, you know, look, that's a reality. That's a man's world, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's George M. Cohan. That's, you know, so being with Hal really reinforced how, you know, a woman's job was really to support these great men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it really didn't happen unless you had these ball-breaker women throwing down to make it happen, you know. And, you know, Hal had this woman, Ruth Mitchell, who's 10 years older than him, who, I'm sorry, was just one of the fiercest women ever, who really made it happen for him. And, you know, and so when I went to work at the Public Theater for George Wolfe right after that, you know, I feel like really my role as the woman who actually made it happen, like, that's where I was in that institution, you know.
Yeah.
So George Wolfe was this incredibly fantastic, brilliant artist. But when it came to getting the job done of running the joint, like, you know, that really fell to me. And I think that that is true for so many women in the business.
Yeah.
And I could, I mean, I can, just so many people come to my mind where, you know, where, and I think ultimately that's why I left, is that I was satisfied by a lot of the challenges of producing and of being able to support other artists as they were, you know, creating their work. But at a certain point, you know, unless we as women realize that we are the ones who have to say, you know, okay, no more of this. Now I myself have to be the leader.
Yeah.
Many people just do that their whole lives, as they just prop up these dudes who, you know, need someone to run these theaters for them.
So what about being queer? I mean, do you feel like, I mean, has being, doing queer theater been something you've wanted to do, and it's been peppered in when you've had an occasion to lend your voice or your talents to that? Or has it really been a mission? Because obviously now you're going to be giving voice to a queer aesthetic.
Yeah, well,
and what does that mean today? I mean, that's one of the things I asked Tina. I was like, is there a queer aesthetic anymore?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think there is a queer aesthetic. I don't really believe that. I think there's a queer sense of humor, and there's a queer culture.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it then translates into a queer aesthetic. I mean, I think there's something that we think of as, you know, I think cabaret, which is something I love you and I both share, and Tina shares,
yeah,
you know, that
the form of cabaret,
the
not
form,
the musical cabaret.
Yeah, well,
although,
I'm sure,
I like that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, me too. You know, so I think there are certain things like that that we cherish and embrace as, mm-hmm, a real queer form. But I think there are so many, you know, being queer today is a totally different experience, and what it means. It's been so exploded over the past, you know, 15 years.
That the gay play is no longer the AIDS play,
yeah, that's
or
exactly
the coming
right.
out play.
That's exactly right. Well, and queer artists are not necessarily expected to do anything queer. They can just make art.
Yeah.
You know, that it's like a luxury to just make art, you know?
Right.
And that was not true when
that's a heavy baby rolling by in that stroller, don't you think? It's a heavy child. So talk to me. You've just announced the first season here at About Face, and I definitely want to talk about that before we wrap up. So tell me about your season and how excited you are with this inaugural season that's all going to be at the Center on Halsted here in Chicago. So there's going to be kind of a home base.
Yeah. The Center on Halsted is really glamorous. That's the thing. Is like when
it's a dress-up place, kind of.
Yeah, it's like
it means
the
get your good flip-flops out.
That's exactly right.
Get your good flip-flops out that you haven't worn to the beach.
I love it. I mean, you come up into this lobby, and it really informed, you know, for me, like, theater architecture and the experience of going to theater, like, just walking in the door, like, the whole thing is theater, you know?
Yeah.
And so when I walked into that space, I was like, oh my goodness, you know?
Yeah.
And it has that beautiful lobby with all those windows looking over Chicago.
And the gay neighborhood.
Yeah,
like,
the neighborhood itself. It's just, it's amazing. So, yeah, and you're walking down, and it's, yeah, beautiful person after you. I mean, it's fantastic to be doing what I'm doing, which is curate things that are in conversation with sexuality and gender. Like, it's beautiful. But that definitely informs what kind of work to put on there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I'm doing, and it's a big experiment, is I'm taking this performer who is largely done in clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And
bars? Bar clubs?
Bar clubs.
Okay.
Yes. And kind of performance clubs, and really more like late night kind of, you know, this guy, Taylor Mack, who has currently been running a show at Here in New York, which is a downtown venue. It's a newly renovated, beautiful building in New York. And he's going to come, and we are opening our season with him. And in a way, and he is so excited because he doesn't get treated as theater.
Yeah.
He gets treated as, you know, performance, or, you know, he'll perform with, like, Nina Hagen, you know, in this very glamorous
Nina
genre.
Hagen.
But So we're going to put him in this, in the center on Halsted, this very glamorous space. And we're going to, you know, and his work is incredible. And it's very queer. You know, it's all about, you know, and he creates these relationships with the audience where he's really testing their comfort zone. But the show itself is beautiful. Hmm. This is incredibly beautiful. And he's playing with drag. It's not traditional drag. But it's spectacular in its the visual of him. You know, he's somewhat of a YouTube phenomenon.
How old is he?
God.
I mean, is he in his 20s or is he in his 30s, 40s? You don't know.
I have no idea. I mean,
okay. I just, you said YouTube, so I just didn't know if he was like a young sprat.
I don't think he's young. Because, you know, he's a member of New Dramatists. Like, he's quite accomplished as a playwright. But I have no idea. And I would hate to say
Let's just say he's 25.
Sure.
He'll love us.
Because we're 25.
He's going to link
25.
This on his website and his MySpace now. Taylor Mack, age 25.
So Taylor Mack is the, you know, is the first kind of, I think of it as like this, the chrysalis of, you know, of the center. And he's, mm-hmm. you know, and that will be a limited engagement.
Yeah.
You know, I think that a lot of people are going to want to come, and only some people are going to be able to come. And, you know, it's going to be that kind of a scene. And then he's never performed in Chicago before. He's performed, like, hundreds of places around the globe, never here for some weird reason. So it's
odd.
Really weird, and we don't know why.
So the winter show, you're going to be incorporating kind of youth. You're going to be doing the thing that I've heard you talk about often, which is, you know, integrating youth and adults and a perspective on the youth today.
Right.
It's kind of echoed through each other.
Like yeah.
Those of us who would be considered adult queers and yep. youth queers.
Well, like we were talking about, it's so different. They are so much more sophisticated about yep. their own questioning yep. than we were at their
yeah,
age. And
absolutely.
I feel like I have so much to learn from them about how yep. to be proud in the world.
Yes.
And
authentic.
And so, and like we were saying, it's so inspiring to be around them. And so I want that for us, the artists of About Face, but I also want it for the audience of About Face. And I want it for, I want to give as many opportunities as we can to the youth artists themselves. So what I'm trying to do is weave them into everything at About Face. And my desire is that the audience always, every time they come to About Face, has an encounter with a youth voice.
Hmm.
Whether that's on stage, whether that's someone who they get to talk to about the play. But it's always an encounter with
the younger generation.
The younger generation of, you know, queer artists. So
Stupid Kids is the
Stupid Kids
of that.
Is, you know, look, this season, I'm thinking as a looking back and looking forward moment for About Face, but also for the queer community. So we're looking back to this play, Stupid Kids, which was written by a friend of mine, John C. Russell. He died in 1994 from AIDS. But it's a high school play set in the late 80s.
Mm.
Many of us
were in high school in the late 80s.
And so that's going to be on stage, this incredible play that I think of as really frozen in that time of, because the first time I saw it, all my friends were dying of AIDS in New
yeah.
York, you know, but it's a joyful play about desire in high school. And at the same time, I want our queer, young queer artists to be involved in the questions of like, okay, what's stupid about kids in high school today?
Mm-hmm.
And really stupid, when he's talking about stupid kids, he really means about like how stupid we are when we first fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's excruciating mm-hmm. in its stupidity. In Stupid Kids, they write poetry about how they really feel. So our contemporary kids, they're going to write like slam pieces, hip-hop poetry about how they feel.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have this mashup on stage of contemporary kids like working through their stuff alongside this incredibly beautiful piece, sort of period piece from the late 80s.
Yeah.
We're going to do that in terms of fashion, and we're going to do it in terms of music, and we're going to, you know, and so dancing, there's going to be a
yeah.
dance off of, like, lame 80s dances and, you know, cool contemporary dances, and we're going to have a lot of fun because we're going to have a professional cast of artists who get to have, like, a mirror cast of young artists
yeah.
that get to do the thing that we really hope to do, which is,
yeah.
like, really be making things together rather than just kind of pushing the young artists into their own like young slot, or here's the young things that we do.
And then in the spring, you have a hot new playwright who's getting a lot of attention, Anne Marie Healy and her new play.
Yeah, Anne Marie.
What Once We Felt.
Has written this play, What Once We Felt. She has created. It's this futuristic, comedic thriller. Ooh. Which, you know what? I'm a real... This is a genre of mine.
Me too. I call them grippers.
I love
you it. You and I have to have a conversation about this. Because can't ever see a play in the theater. This is the great question. I have been asking it. Kelly and I sit around and I'm like, there needs to be a play that I feel the same kind of feeling I felt in Jagged Edge when they saw The Typewriter or Silence of the Lambs when the lights go out. I want that moment in the theater, mm-hmm. and I rarely, if ever, have it.
Yeah.
And really, I would say rare because I may have had it once in all the theater I've seen. Like, I want that gripper, that gripper moment. Yeah, just discussing this. So I'm loving it that she's constructing a thriller.
I feel like I've felt it a few times. You know what? What's that blind refrigerator? But wait until dark.
Yes.
Oh my God, that's
so scary. They're getting ready to do that somewhere.
It's so scary. Well, okay, this play.
Our theater's doing Wait Until Dark.
Okay, well, that is a scary
MCA. We'll go together.
Okay, that
would
be so fun.
We'll go together and we'll grip together. We'll grab popcorn. You just gotta see the popcorn fly and the knees come up to your chest. I love it.
This play has also a futuristic angle. Uh-huh. So sometimes it's harder to do the math because you don't know enough about like where you're, what are the rules of this world. And it feels like it's futuristic, but it also feels like a parallel universe to where we are at today. And it's very, very funny because it has a storyline that's about a novelist that's just trying to get published. And, you know, as artists, we are always pitching our work and we hear the editor or some say just crazy things about our plays. And because we want to get it done, we go, how interesting, you know? And so we get to laugh along with her as she is like going through this crazy experience. But at the same time, it's set in a culture where that one of the races is being forced to go extinct. And it's an incredible moment to be suddenly watching a culture go through. And so it's this really political play, but you think you're watching a comedy, and that tension between those two things is really beautiful. And Anne Marie is an incredible writer that I feel like is one of the major, major voices of the next generation. And so I'm so excited to be doing the world premiere. And I'm hoping, you know, I'm a big proponent of getting theaters around the country to join in a world premiere. So I'm hoping, I think Playwrights Horizons in New York is also really interested in the play and other places. And so hopefully we'll be one of many places doing this play next year.
So I just want to add that you're also going to be trying to give voice to new works and new little special opportunities throughout the season. So people should really just check out the aboutfacetheater.com website because there's going to be so much coming to Chicago stages via Bonnie Metzger and About Face Theater. So, you know, go there and check out in case you're coming to Chicago. If you're listening to this and you enjoy the podcast and you're not in this area, it's definitely something that you should plan on doing, is going to see an About Face Theater show when you come to town. So, Bonnie, welcome to Chicago. It will not be the last time we talk, I'm sure, in this upcoming season. But best of luck, Maird. Should be a fun ride. And we'll see you at the first show in the fall.
Thanks.
Hi there, I'm Deb Pierce, Toronto's official queer respondent. I'll be keeping you plugged into what's hot in Toronto this summer. The summer heat has arrived and the beaches, including the nude one, are now open, so I hope you'll pack your bags and join us for a drink on a patio here at Toronto's Gay Village. It won't be just the weather heating things up in the city this summer. Performances like Dirty Dancing, Evil Dead the Musical, and Avenue Q will be keeping things hot on stage in Toronto this summer. Visit www.seetorontonow.com to find out why you should be heading to Toronto this summer. Hope to see you soon.
Coleman, it has been so great to have you on the past couple of shows. I know we'll talk to you again in September, and many more fun and fabulous things will be going on in your life.
Yeah, that'll be good.
You will probably be Officer whatever your name is going to be.
Officer what is it? I want to say Cheshire like the cat. So, but I have no idea. Officer something.
You'll get it if it's Officer Cheshire. You've got that like Cheshire grin, that smile, that cat-like quality. Yeah. I think
maybe I'll do that in the audition.
Maybe. You should say my acting coach, Amy, she's a really amazing queer caster. She said that I should do this for my audition. They'll probably hand it to you just when you walk in your very nicely ironed pants. That's what I think is going to happen.
They look great now. They look fabulous. I actually have them on.
Yeah.
Actually, hold on. I'll turn on the video so you can actually see it.
Wait, now, Raul does not iron your pants for you? Oh, there you go.
Oh, look at that bubble butt. Guys, you all are missing it. I wish I could take a snapshot of this.
And I won't wear the Debbie Harry shirt, though. I'm going
to
change
it. You need to wear your neon Deborah Harry. Back before Deborah Harry was crazy as a fucking loon, which she was on the True Colors tour. Now, now see, why is Raul, your lover, not ironing your pants? This is what I want to know. I'm trying to find out how I can get Kelly to, like, iron shit for me.
Usually he does, but he's over there working on an essay so he can get into Parsons School of Design. So
there you go.
We got to wish him luck on that.
And then, I'm wishing him big luck. Design of clothes?
Yeah.
So he should be on Project Runway.
We totally want to get him on Project Runway. We have to work that out. We got to get him on there.
I had two sets of friends both in line to be on Big Brother next season, shit. And I only heard that one of them did not make it through. But the other gay couple, I haven't heard yet.
Wow.
They wanted some gays. Maybe you guys could go. Not Big Brother, sorry. Amazing Race.
Amazing Race. I would love that. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah. They would like you guys. Y'all are cute interracial gay couple from New York. I think that you all should apply. All right, honey, break a leg, Maird. We will talk to you in September. And keep up with your fabulous self. Everybody pick up Out Magazine September issue and check out Coleman Domingo, the man that we have the honor of having on our show twice a month. And we'll talk to you in September, Coleman.
I'll talk to you in September, sweetie.
And have a great time. If you're in the San Francisco area, see Coleman's show, A Boy in His Soul, September 4th through the 16th at the Thick House, right?
At the Thick House.
And say hi and say that the Queer Cast sent you. All right, everybody, have a great day.
It's a new day. It's a new life.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queer Cast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming. Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our QueerCast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, Amy Wooten, news editor, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueerCast.com and iTunes. The next QueerCast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City QueerCast, queer and now.